Gotcha. And your name, your full name, your Captain Fred Jones?
Frank Jones.
Fellow, the Yukon means many things. But to Captain Frank Jones, it meant running boats on the Yukon River. Today, we're going to talk with Captain Jones and find out about his life.
Been here a long time.
Since 1911 is a long time, Captain. Well, you came up here in 1911.
1911, yeah.
From where did you come?
Wyoming.
And you
Buffalo.
You didn't have any river boating experience when you came up?
Oh, no. No, that my experience has all been since I came up here.
What brought you up here?
The mining bug fever. Mining fever.
The gold fever?
Yeah, I come up to get rich.
Well, how did you get into the river boating then?
Well, it's just a sort of a case of having to go to work. There was an opening on the river, so I started in as a deckhand and worked up.
Whereabouts was this that you began?
Right here in Fairbanks. Now, the river boats used to land right here in front of the old NC company.
Yes.
Right, they come right up the Chena River.
I see.
But they closed the this Chena part off, and of course they can't come up here anymore. But it used to be a big river out here.
I see. Well, then you started as a deckhand.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And how did you, you became a riverboat captain, I believe.
Yeah.
When did you start actually running the boats?
Oh, about 1958, 48, I'd say, yeah.
How many, if you came here in 1911, you certainly saw a lot of change in
our
country.
I should say so. There's been from dog teams to automobiles, from river boats to flying machines.
Yes, sure.
There was no such thing as an automobile when I came up here.
Did you get into mining at all?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mined in what they call the Bonnefield country. I was on Grubstake Creek and Gold King Creek.
I've been there.
Oh, you have?
Yes,
been on Gold King, I suppose.
No, I was on Homestake Creek.
Oh, well, Grubstake's the one I was on.
Grubstake, yeah.
Yeah?
Well, is there a Homestake Creek?
There is, yeah.
That's
but
where I was. It was on the Homestake Creek. Yeah.
I'm never on Homestake Creek.
But I packed in there one time with a group that was doing some mining. That was really, oh, that's beautiful country.
Yeah.
Do you mind if I close the door?
No, no.
Just a little bit closer. Well, going back to the river boating. Now, the river boats ran from here down to St. Michael's. Did they?
From here to St. Michael, yeah.
And the big ships would come from Seattle or the West Coast? And when did they would leave the West Coast about what time? How did it work? What was the freighting process?
Well, the process was the river boats would go down as far as Marshall. That was as far as they went.
Oh.
And they would pick up freight from these outside boats there.
Now, were there different types of river boats?
Oh, sure, yeah. We started out with the stern wheelers, you know.
Yes.
You know George Black's boat?
Yes.
Boats that was built like that. And then they transferred over to the propeller boats.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I used to be on the old Nenana, you know, that's sitting down here?
In Alaska Land?
Yeah.
Yes.
I used to work on her, and they put her out of business, and all the other boats. There was the Alice and the Barry Kay and the Nenana and two or three more river boats. But
now, did the boats ever tow? I understand that many boats pushed barges. Did they also tow barges?
Not on the river.
Did not on the river.
No, it was all pushing. The barge was in front. And not only one barge, you'd have as high as, oh, sometimes five, sometimes six. But ordinarily, three or four never went with one barge, very seldom.
Well, Captain Jones, tell me, wasn't it kind of difficult? You had many obstacles in the Yukon River. This is, for one thing, it's one of the longest rivers in the world.
Yeah.
And are there such things as whirlpools?
Oh, no, no, nothing that's anything like would be dangerous, no. There's a lot of sandbars that you can hit and get stuck and cause you a lot of grief, though.
Yes.
Especially on the Tanana here.
How about the channels on the Yukon? Are they something you can learn, can a person learn them easily? Or?
Well, oh yeah, if you get a pretty good memory, you can learn the channels quite easily. But here on the Tanana, it's a great deal different because this is a muddy stream and the channel changes and one trip to the channel will be in one place, and the next trip it might be a half a mile over in another place. But on the Yukon, it stays pretty much permanent.
Yes. How about, well, in the early days there were Indians here, actively running up and down the rivers in canoes, I imagine.
Well, yes, sure, they still are.
Are they?
Oh, yeah. Well, not canoes much anymore. They've got the gas boats.
Is there any competition between the riverboat? I mean, if a riverboat's coming up with you, did you ever run into a group of people in small boats that could present an obstacle?
Oh, no. They'd get out of the way.
I see.
You see, those big boats throw in there. Quite a wave, a canoe or a small boat is apt to get swamped if they don't take to shore, you know. They usually would go to shore and hold their boat there until we'd get past. Especially going upstream, the boats throw quite a, wave.
Who were some of the different companies that owned riverboats?
Well, it was the NC Company and the DC Company, Dominion Commercial and the NC. And that was all a long, long time ago. And then there was the NC and the DC, and quite a few private outfits.
The great big boats. Now, over at Whitehorse, I've seen the big river boats.
Yeah.
Up on the dried out there.
Yeah.
Who were those owned by the Canadian government or privately owned?
Oh, no, they was boats that run on the Yukon River here.
Did you ever run up that far? What's the farthest upriver you ever ran?
Well, White Horse.
You run here to White Horse?
Oh, yeah.
that so?
Yeah. Yeah, used to go through the White Horse Rapids there. And, or not the... Yeah.
I wondered how it was possible for a riverboat to go up those rapids. It looks like they're full of rocks.
Well, after they got the propeller boats, it was easy. But when the old stern wheelers, they used to have to pull them through, winch them through.
They winched them through.
Yeah. See, there's a winch on the boat, and there'd be a dead man. What they call a dead man to hook to, up a quarter of a mile ahead, and they'd run this cable up there and pull them through with the winch.
But
when they get more power, why, they...
They could propel themselves.
Yeah, they make it themselves.
Well, I imagine that there was a lot of excitement in running those
Well, you get into some kind of exciting trouble once in a while, but... You know, I've been to the head of the Porcupine on river boats.
Have you?
Yeah, up as far as Rampart House.
Is that so?
Yeah. We went up there in 1912 to get the boundary surveyors.
Well, what is the country like up there? Is that scrub timber?
No, it's the same thing as here.
I see.
Yeah.
Kind of rolling and...
Yeah.
What time of the year, then, would you go up there?
Well, we only made the one trip up. You see, when they put that boundary survey through, why, they had horses. They didn't have automobiles and flying machines and stuff like that. There's horses, so we went up there and... took them up, and then in the fall and brought them back.
What kind of a boat was that?
It's what the a stern wheel.
That was a stern wheel.
Oh yeah. See, it was. They didn't have these propeller boats in the early days.
I see.
See, there's the old Nenana down here, stern wheeler.
Well, when did they get the propeller boats? In the 40s, maybe?
I should know the date exactly, but my memory's getting so I can't tell, because I forgot just what year it was, but I was on the Alice, that was a stern wheeler, when the river boats came in. We picked them up at Marshall, or a place across from Marshall called Railroad City. And we left our boat right there, give it to the mission there at Holy Cross.
You did?
We give that old Alice to the mission, and we got the new boat.
I'll be darned.
Just transferred our gear over.
That was really a very historic trip in a way.
Yeah. Yeah, the mission. Holy Cross Mission, they used it down there for a while, which is no good to us anymore. When we got these boats, they would come up the rivers 8-9 miles an hour, where the old Alice and the stern wheelers would make about 4 or 5, you know.
So the new boats made half again the speed anyway.
Half again the speed, and it pushed twice the load.
They would.
Yeah.
Now, did you push loads with the stern wheelers? Oh, yeah, sure.
We pushed barges.
You did?
Yeah.
How can you see where you're going up ahead of all those, all that stuff out
Stringer
in front of you?
Stringer barges? Well, you know, we never turned up, tied up night or day.
You didn't?
Night or day. You had to know the river, that's all. You just had to know the river. And they had the big searchlights for night work.
Well, would you have somebody sounding out in front of you?
We used to, yeah. Yeah, on the front of the barge, on each corner, would have a man with a pole about 12, 14 foot long with footmarks on it.
Oh.
You know, the first bottom of it was 2 feet, then 3 feet, 4 feet, 5 feet, 6 feet, and marked on it. But they done away with that, and they got what they call these fathom meters.
Of course.
And that done away with all this foolishness, having somebody stand out there punching a pole down in the water to see how deep it was.
Well, of course, if you've got, how long was each barge? 20, 30 feet long?
20 or 30. 230.
Each barge?
Oh, no, no. Barges can be any length, but I don't remember of ever pushing one less than 100 feet, 90 feet, to 230 feet.
Really? How many barges then would you put out in front of you? Two or three barges?
Well, you double them up side by side.
Oh.
You put if you had four barges, you'd have two in front and two behind,
I see.
If you had more, you might have three behind and two in front.
Well, you could have 500 or 600 feet in length of additional barge out in front of the nose of the ship.
Well, I wouldn't say 500 or 600 feet. We could usually two. 300, 400 feet, yeah.
Well, now, even with a fathometer going, if your channel runs out and gets shallow, you could run those barges right up onto a sandbar.
Well, you certainly could, yeah, sure. That's been done many times, but when you learn the river well enough, you know where to look out for those sandbars. You don't... You're not up there in the wheelhouse piloting those boats unless you know where you're going.
I see.
That's something that is for the experts,
sure.
You might
yes.
say.
Well, what was the difference between running, actually, as a captain operating a riverboat, when you went from the stern wheeler to the turbine-powered boat? What was the difference in the feel of the boat? And
well, there wasn't so much difference in the feel of the running of it. There may be a little more vibration to the propeller boats back aft in the engine room. But they're pretty much the same. But the propeller boats, they developed so much more power than more speed and more power.
I think there's a beauty about the stern wheeler.
Yeah, it's... there's something about those old stern wheelers, you know, that... person likes. Now, like I really like to go with George Black on his trips, or not George Black now, but Jim Binkley, and Art Peterson. Those fellows that got those stern wheelers. Usually each summer I take a trip with them.
You do?
Get up there in the pilot house.
Yeah.
Used to be a tourist boat that run from Dawson City to Fairbanks here. Oh, yes. They carry 100 passengers, and it is pretty much filled up each trip.
Now, in the early mining days, when you first came here,
yeah.
Of course, the big Klondike rush was over, but there was still quite a lot of traffic going on for mining. And so, were there some boats that carried mostly passengers that were really outfitted for passengers?
Yeah, they were. There was the Tananaw and the Yukon and the Swatka. And Oh, great many, especially the Tanana. That was the tourist boat that done most of the travel between Dawson and Fairbanks here. And you wouldn't think so to look at it today, but they drove right up this Chena Slough and landed right in front of the NC company there.
Now, how was that boat decked out? How did it look inside?
Oh, it looked beautiful. It's state rooms, you know, nicer than this room. It's nice. And a great big dining hall, you know, with some of them had tables where you set four, five, six, and others had the long tables where they, you know, gather around family style. It was really very pretty much home-like. Well, those boats, they didn't spare any expense making it nice.
Is that
so? Oh, no, I tell you, they... If you're going to have people traveling with you, like 100 tourists, they're not going to put up with... They used to run special tours at, from Dawson City right here to Fairbanks,
Right up to town
here. Yeah.
Well, would these people come up from the States on the railroad, or?
It was quite a business. They didn't come on the railroad. That was before the railroad was even built.
I see. Tell me, what kind of a boat did you like to run the best?
Oh, the new boats, the new propeller boats. Mm-hmm. They was faster and stronger. And
do you have any particular trips that are memorable to you?
Yes, the trip we made up the Porcupine River, for one. We went up to get the surveyors in 1912. We went up there, brought back a barge load of horses and about a dozen surveyors, and they were surveying the boundary line. Come in. Oh, I suppose you...
I asked if there was a difference in the channels.
Sure, yes, you betcha. You see, we used to run right up here to Fairbanks, in what's known as the Chena Slough now.
Yes.
But, of course, they can't do that anymore.
But now, between the Tanana and the Yukon, different kinds of water have a different feel, do they?
The Tanana is mud.
Is that so?
Muddy. And the Yukon is more gravel. And the channel doesn't change in the Yukon, where it is continually changing in the Tanana here.
Is that so?
Yeah.
Well, that's interesting.
We used to have to put out what they call sounding boats.
Yes.
That would send the pilot or the mate down ahead to locate the channel. Especially one bad place was what they called squall crossing. That was, down at the mouth of the Tanana. Squall crossing, and there was a lot of bad places. That one trip you'd go here, and one trip you'd go there. And when they got the sounding boats would go ahead and locate the channel.
I see.
And then they'd pilot us through.
I see. now how about on the Porcupine, going up a river where you don't know what lies ahead? How do you run a river like that?
You've got to know rivers, that's all. Yeah.
Well, what does that mean? What do you look for?
Well, you look for crossings, what they call a crossings, where you've got to go from one side to the other and follow along the cut banks where usually the water is deep.
The important thing, your objective, when you're running a riverboat, the important thing for you to do is stay in deep water.
Yeah, that you've got to do. You've got to stay where the boat will float. And these riverboats, it usually took it we could go across 4 feet, 3.5, 4 feet, and sometimes it'd get less than that and have to pull ourselves across. You know? What I mean by that is it'd put up a tow line far ahead, and then they had these winches, what they call a winch.
Yes.
On the bow of the boat and pull her through.
I see. I don't know any other word for it, what you call a dead man.
Well, that's...
But that's what you do. You'd put in a log, sink in a log, or find a solid tree or something.
Yeah, that's exactly it. If you could get a good tree, why, that was fine. If you couldn't, why, you'd have to dig a hole down in the ground and lay a log in there and hook a cable around that and bring it back to your boat and pull yourself through.
I see.
We used to have to do that at what they call the Rampart Rapids.
Oh, where are they? They're on the Yukon.
Yeah.
And that's in the area where Rampart is.
Yeah.
And I didn't know that it got that shallow there.
Well, it gets shallow every place in the water. Quite a lot of places.
I see, because of course the river does vary.
Yeah, yeah.
Would there be a difference in years? Like mm-hmm. More water some years than others?
More water in some years than others, of course, but that didn't affect the channel so much. Usually in low water, the channel would stay in one place. When it was not too high. Then you'd get a extremely high water and it would fill up. Especially one bad place is what they call Squaw Crossing. And down at the mouth of the Tanana where you went into the Yukon, it would change.
When you say it was bad, you mean you would have to relocate it each time and it moved around a lot?
It moved around, yeah, the channel changed.
I see. How about white water? How does this affect the boat?
Well, white water is what you'd call very swift water. It'd just take more power to get through.
Less power coming back.
They come quite fast sometimes coming back.
Yeah, but that's a thrill too. Now seriously, running down river and going through rapids, is there any danger to a riverboat?
No, really, there isn't.
There isn't?
No. Of course, yes, there is. You can pile them up. You see, going downriver, we used to have to tie up at nights. But coming upriver, you could take a chance because you wouldn't run aground so easily.
Is that so?
See, coming upriver, you'd be maybe making 6 miles an hour, 7.
And that was the work?
Yeah. But going downriver, why, you'd be making 12, 14 miles an hour. And you didn't have time to do much investigating, finding out where the channel was.
I see.
That was the object in running these...
You said that was the object in...
Running the pilot boats ahead, you know, to locate the channel for you.
I see.
Because especially the Tanana River down, it's the mouth of the Tanana. One trip, your channel might be way over here, and the next trip, way over there. It's still the same, of course. They don't run those boats anymore. The only boats.
Now, how could a boat pile up when you said running downstream?
Well, by piling up, I mean hitting a sandbar.
I see. Missing the channel.
Yeah.
You just go so fast you lose control.
Yeah. Well, you don't lose control, but if the channel's changed on you, you go where it was the time before, and this time it isn't there. It changed.
Sure.
Yeah.
Well, did very many boats, what are some of the bad things that can happen? Do boats ever capsize in the rivers?
Oh, no. No. The worst that happened is somebody fall overboard.
I see.
We've had that happen.
Is that so?
Yeah, we had a deck boy by the name of Johnny Gordon. He fell off right across from Holy Cross there, and we lost him, drowned. We spent 24 hours looking for the body. We never could locate it.
Well, I understand that there's an awful lot of silt in these rivers.
Yeah, there is.
And if a person is clothed, that the weight of this dirt gets into the clothes.
That's right.
It sinks
it. Yeah, that's on the Tanana. But on the Yukon, the water's pretty much clear.
Is that?
Yeah. When you hit the Yukon, you...
Now, you said that you ran, coming up river, you'd run all the way.
Yeah, at night as well as day.
How about putting in at ports along the way?
Oh, that was easily done.
Did you do this regularly? Did you stop and...
Oh, sure. Stopped at every place.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
And were there wharves built for the boats? Did they have big docks out? Did every little town have docks?
Oh, no. Just land and tie up to the beach.
Oh, really?
Oh, sure.
Right on the...
Yeah.
On the mud?
Yeah. Yeah, like Ruby there. Would land there, put off freight, and the way they had a taking the freight off in them days was on trucks, what they called, you know, they would, a cable that would run up to their warehouse and go around what they call a shiv or a block and run back and hook onto these trucks, and the winch would pull them up.
Well, what was the truck?
Well, the truck was just like similar to a two-wheeled affair with handles on it that you'd load up. And
I see. Well, they were kind of like a wagon.
Yeah, yeah.
And then they'd pull those up into the warehouse.
Pull them up into the warehouse. And then they could, didn't need to pull them back. Because it's downhill.
Oh, they just let him go.
Well, the man would have to hang on to him, take care of it.
Now they'd go back down. Sure, yeah. But I'd say they'd winch the freight up, so to speak, to the warehouse. Huh? Is it pretty steep there at Ruby?
No, well, it was kind of steep, yes.
Tell me about the Yukon River. What does it look like? I've flown over it, but I've never been on the Yukon. I've seen White Horse Rapids at White Horse.
Yeah. Well, it's just the great big river that, with a good many channels that take off, and you've got to know which one to take.
Does it, you mean it doesn't divide?
It divides. There's big islands, you know, and you've got to know whether to go on one side or the other side. Because you take the wrong one and you're stuck.
Sure. Well, does it generally have high banks? Now, I've been to Circle City, and there
we used to run to Circle City, and it was more or less sloping up to the warehouse where we'd pull a...
There's an area that's sloping, but then down below the town, there it looks like the banks are probably 15 or 20 feet high.
Well, we...
And didn't. I suppose there are places where there are high cliffs.
Well, sure, yeah.
So the terrain would vary.
Yeah. It used to be that they'd have a wood camp. When we burned wood, they'd burn wood to start with.
Oh.
Every 10, 15 miles, there'd be a wood camp.
Oh.
You'd stop and load up with wood, and that was your fuel that made the steam to propel these boats.
Well, that's interesting. It really, then a lot of people were required to keep these boats running.
Yeah, we, some of the boats you'd call, you'd have a captain, pilot, two or three mates, and as high as 12 deckhands. Then you had your galley and your galley crew, cooks and waiters. And
then on top of that, you have men cutting wood every 15 miles.
Well, that was the way a lot of people made their living. They would cut wood in the winter and do a little trapping. And when summertime come, why, they had wood camps, what they called wood camps.
Stop. To support the riverboat traffic.
Yeah, yeah.
Well,
to furnish the fuel for these boats.
What do you think is one of your most interesting experiences?
Well, I think about the most interesting is the trip we made up the Porcupine to Rampart House to pick up this surveying crew. They were surveying the boundary line between Canada and the United States. Of course, everything was dogs and horses. We went up there and picked up a barge load of horses, these surveyors, and that was a real interesting trip.
What was interesting about it?
Well, the thing that was interesting to me was this new country, and there weren't too many of these boats run up there.
Oh.
It was only on special occasions that...
A riverboat has ever gone
yeah,
up there?
Yeah. There's Old Rampart, New Rampart.
What is an Old Rampart?
Well, there isn't anything there anymore.
What was there then?
A trading post that would trade with the natives for fur. And you'd supply these trading posts with their year's supply of stuff because there was no airplane. There's no way to get anything there outside of your year's supply by boat. Like your eggs. They had to take a year's supply of eggs. And of course they had a treatment for these eggs that they would keep, you know, sort of a paraffin that'd go through sort of to close up the pores in the eggs, and then they would keep through the year. You would get a case of eggs that had been prepared that way, and they'd be just as good in the spring.
Is that so? We might have a little kick.
Yeah, but they kept them.
Well, how did the horses behave? How did they like it being on the...
They didn't mind. No. We put them on the barge and had the hay for them, fed them, took care of them. Yeah, that was all right with them.
Yeah. Did anything exciting ever happen on your trips, besides someone falling overboard?
Well, no, not so much. Everyday occurrences is exciting when you get stuck on a bar and had to get yourself off.
Yes. And that was really kind of routine, wasn't it, to get stuck on a bar?
Yeah, it happened quite often in them days. You see, later years they got these fathometers, fathometers, and give you the depth of the water. That was something that was put down at the front end of your barge, and it might be 300 feet ahead of you, and then an electric cord would run right back to the wheelhouse and record the depth of the water. But previous to that, why, they used to have the deckhands out with the sounding poles. The fathometers, they changed all that.
I see.
Much better. Sandbars was sort of a regular occurrence in the early days.
Yeah.
We expected that occasionally.
Yeah.
But we had means of getting off the hard way.
I hope you would have to winch yourself off.
Yeah.
Was there any other way?
Well, that is about the only way.
You couldn't dig yourself out?
No.
And you'd have to run against the sand. Could you back off sometimes?
Well, you could back out. You wasn't stuck that way. It was going ahead. You didn't want to go back. You could back off all right, but... You had to get across this bar to go...
Oh, I see. I was thinking like if you got into the wrong channel or something.
Well, you wouldn't be much of a pilot if you got into the wrong channel.
Well, except that, like on the Tananaw, where channels change so rapidly, sometimes I should imagine it would be possible to get up the wrong channel.
Oh, it was. We had our most trouble. Where the Tananaw and the Yukon connected.
Mm-hmm.
Down at Tananaw there.
Yes.
You see the Tananaw run into the Yukon at Tananaw.
Yes.
And that was invariably, that was changing.
I see.
And there's a place they called Squaw Crossing. That was at the mouth. As I say, the channel would be here.
One time
and over to
sure.
The other side the next time, or maybe down through the middle.
So if you did get hung up, you could back out sometimes.
Yeah.
And
take
the other channel?
Yeah.
Did you ever do that?
Oh, sure, we've done it.
Yeah.
Plenty of times.
Sure.
Yeah.
What was life like in the little villages down along the river?
Well, it was pretty good.
I'll bet it was. As a matter of fact. Now, where did you make your home? Here in Fairbanks?
Well, I was at Nenana.
Oh, you were?
Yeah. That is my home.
Oh.
That is the head of navigation. That's where we picked up our loads and went down the Tananaw to the Yukon. Then you could either go up the Yukon to Rampart and Fort Yukon or down the Yukon to Ruby and Holy Cross. Well, sure, yes, it had an importance. That is about the only way to get any freight anywhere. I remember when the town of Nenana was bigger than Fairbanks.
Is that so?
Sure. In fact, I used to play ball on the Nenana team, and we would play Fairbanks up here. Before there was a time, you know, that Fairbanks got pretty low.
In the 20s, was it?
Yeah. And Nenana was really, it looked at that time as though that would be the important place. But it turned out differently.
It didn't continue to grow and develop?
No.
How about how many people were there at that time?
Oh, 600 or 700.
I see.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But, and most of the business was freighting?
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, how about in the springtime? How soon in the spring could you begin?
We usually was called to work around the 15th of April, 1st of May. It would take two or three weeks getting the boats ready, and they'd be frozen in the river, you know, and cutting the ice out, getting the ice out from around them. So they would float and wouldn't stick to the bottom. The water would go down, these boats would be on the bottom, and sometimes they'd freeze there. We had steam, and we'd thaw out around them and raise them so that. If we didn't do that, why, when the water come out up the planking that is froze to the bottom would pull out, you know, and you'd lose your boat.
Oh no!
Yeah.
I guess, you know, I never thought of that. There are a lot of things about river boating in the north that are a little bit different.
Oh, well, very much different. Yeah.
Mostly because of the ice.
Yes.
What are some of the other things that might make it different?
Well, I don't think there's any river anywhere that changes as much as this Tanana River. And as I say, we used to bring the boats right up here to Fairbanks.
Yes. And you had to find your way through these new channels every trip.
Well, they didn't change every trip, but they were places that you had to prospect the channel before you dared.
Well, that's what I mean. Most
yeah.
every trip, you'd have to check it.
Yeah. Yeah, we always put a sounding boat out ahead. That would be a man in a small boat with a motor, you know, that would go along and sound it and find the channel, and then if it was all right, you'd wave a flag, and we would follow through. And if it wasn't, you'd wave a red flag if it wasn't. And we would stay there until he did locate it. But if you got the white flag, why, then you'd go right on through.
When you would come into a town, were people excited to see the riverboat come in?
I don't think there was ever a time, night or day, that you'd ever come into Ruby or Tanana or any of those little towns that the whole town wouldn't be there to meet the boat. That was one of the most exciting things. It was at these villages. Yeah, the whole town would turn out.
How often would it take you to make a run from Nenana? Where would you go then? When you started out in the spring?
We'd start out in the spring, and usually the end of our trip was at Railroad City. That's right across from Holy Cross. We'll call it Holy Cross, too.
Railroad City?
Yeah.
I've never heard of that before.
Yeah, that was where the big warehouses was, and we'd unload there.
Where do you suppose it got its name?
Well, there was no railroad there, but it got its name from a tramway that they used to have a tramway, you know, that they would haul freight over that with small cars, you know, about
'Gee, that's most interesting. So you'd go from Holy Cross, you'd run down from Nenana to Holy Cross.
Yeah.
You'd pick up your load at Railroad City.
Railroad City, yeah.
And then you turn around and head back up.
Yeah.
Now, if you left in, say, the 1st of May, is that when the river would open, or when would the
Well, we left just as quick as the ice was out of the Yukon.
I see. Would there be actually any ice still coming down the river?
Yeah, it sometimes we would run into floating ice. But usually it was pretty clear. We couldn't take a chance on too much ice.
Mm-hmm.
Coming back sometimes in the fall, you'd run into a little ice, but that wasn't so bad.
Now, and then it would take you, say, a week or 2 weeks or a month to get down to Railroad City?
It takes about 10, 12 days to make the round trip.
Oh, to make a round trip?
Yeah, oh. To go down and back.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
Now, is this with a stern wheeler or with
that the... That was with the stern wheeler.
That was with the stern wheeler. And then you could make it with the power boat in maybe 7 days.
Oh, yeah, with the one we got the propeller-driven boats, why we could make it, they were faster and better all the way around.
I see. Now, I've heard of boats getting stuck in the fall, being frozen in.
Yeah.
How would this happen?
Well, the ice would come and you just couldn't buck the ice coming back. You see, these was all wooden hulls in them days, and you couldn't buck that ice. And sometimes they would have to tie up for the winter down in some slough or some place kind of off the main channel. Then they'd leave a watchman there through the winter. And there she'd set until spring. Then you'd get back down to them with the rog team before the airplane.
I see.
Be there when the river opened.
Did you ever have that happen to you?
No, I can't say that I ever did. I went prepared one winter to stay as watchman on the boat, but we made it back, so I didn't have to.
It really must have been exciting, though. I suppose when you were rushing against time, against the freeze-up, had a sense of pressure.
Yeah, you did.
My husband, I told you, is a pilot, an airplane pilot. And he's a very cool sort of person, very calm, very much in control of things.
I notice those airplane pilots are that way. I've got a pretty good friend that... I know down here in town that's an airplane pilot, and he's a mighty cool customer.
Who is that? Tony Schultz.
Yeah, Tony Schultz, sure.
Is that who you're thinking
of? Yeah.
I don't know why, I just saw a picture of Tony when you were talking. But he's an interesting person.
Yeah.
But yes, Tony's he and my husband have flown together, but... I imagine you as a riverboat captain, you're a very stable, controlled sort of person, and I imagine that it takes this kind of a personality, this inner strength sort of thing, calm in the face of danger, because actually I've heard other people talk about riverboating. It's like aviation. My husband takes it in his stride. It is an everyday thing, and there's nothing that exciting about it. And yet other people go up in an airplane, and it's the most exciting thing that's ever happened to them. And I've heard of other people talking about river boating, that it was fraught with danger. You know, every corner of the river held something, some new challenge. And you remind me of my husband, because you have this ability to anticipate, to know what you're doing, and to be calm and cool and collected.
Well, if you get excited, you're going to get in trouble. I don't care much what you're doing.
Yeah? Yes, that's true. Gee, I have some other questions I was going to ask you. What time? You, 2:45. You don't go to dinner until 4:00.
No.
I'm not keeping you from that.
No.
It's getting a little warm, because I've got a sweater on.
Yeah, that's better. Let a little air in here.
Yeah.
I've got the fan, but we can't. The porcupine isn't too much, there wasn't too much up there. There was what they call the rampart house, old rampart, new rampart. We'd take a trip up there once a year with freight for those people. And as I said.
Oh, then you made other trips up there. After you went up there to pick up the...
The horses and the surveyors?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah, there was always a boat or two go up there, but as it happened, I didn't happen to be on those particular boats.
I see.
See, we had 4 or 5 boats running. There was the Alice and the Barry Kay and the Yukon.
Now, were these Northern Commercial Company boats? Or who owned this?
Well, they were, in the early days, Northern Commercial ran them. And then this Art Peterson, you know Art
yes,
Peter?
Yes.
He took them over in later years, and I think he's still the operator.
I believe so.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I used to work when he had them. In fact, I worked before he had them a long time too, but I worked for Art there for 3 or 4 years.
How about funny things happening?
Well, there was quite a lot of funny things that happened on the river.
Did they? What sort of things?
Well, it used to be quite a trip for school teachers and secretaries, and they used to get out and have their little jamborees.
Oh, they did?
Oh, yeah.
The ladies livened things up then.
Yeah.
Were there any robberies on the river?
Not, no.
Well, like, you know, a riverboat holdup.
No.
No, you know, the great train holdup.
No.
No great riverboat holdups.
No.
Were you here when, I guess it's until recently, a form of cash has been gold. Did you haul gold on the riverboats?
Well.
As a load of gold?
No. But there was a time up here that paper money wasn't so very plentiful. It was all gold. You'd have a stack of $20 gold pieces, and that was really nice money. I was always sorry I never saved gold pieces.
Tell me, what would it cost for a person to make a trip from Dawson to Fairbanks? Do you recall, say in the 20s, what the fare might have been?
No, I really don't. We had a purser, you know.
Yeah, that took care of all that.
That took care of all of that, and I don't know the.
Yes.
But it wasn't cheap.
What was the biggest payload? Were you ever concerned with the cargo?
Well, I was concerned in quite a manner with the cargo, as when I was mate.